Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, a place for curious minds to fill up on leadership inspiration and hear wonderful stories of mojo, lost and found, high and low. I'm your host, Richard Stokes, and we meet here every fortnight to spend time with a diverse and brilliant group of guests who have been generous to spend time with me. This new series, the sixth, is all about commitment, a concept we all understand, but that can prove elusive and even fearful to us. So in this series, I wanted to get under the skin of commitment, how we can commit to ourselves, to our values, to our purpose, and then see the payoff we can see when we literally choose not to have any more choice. This week, I have an exclusive interview timed to mark International Women's Day. It's with a trailblazer, a pioneer in their sport, someone who's committed to their passion and to being an inspiring force. Here's how you may have heard of her.
Some more breaking news to bring you. Busy hour this. There's going to be some history made this Christmas in the Premier League. Rebecca Welsh is going to be the competition's first female referee.
My guest this week is Rebecca Welsh, English football referee and the first woman to referee a game in both the English Football League and on the 23rd of December 2023 in the Premier League, the biggest football league in the world. And we talk about that experience, how it felt to walk out on the pitch with the eyes of the footballing world on her and what was going through her mind at that moment.
I know there's a big emphasis on Rebecca Welsh as the first female, but I wanted to be there because the people who make these decisions thought I was good enough to be there. And that's so important for me. You know, it's great that I can do it as a female, but I want to be good enough, because if you're not good enough at that level, like, it can be a long 90 minutes.
This is a really honest and open conversation with someone at the top of their game. You'll get a clear sense of Rebecca, or Bex, as she prefers to be called off the pitch, and her values, her beliefs, what's really shaped her. It really is a Sunday League to Premier League story. You'll hear her humility and humanity, and you'll get so many tips on leadership, because that's what Bex most certainly is, a leader. And not just as the first woman in England to do what she has done, but more so how she manages each game she goes into, the preparation, the decision-making, the communication skills she shows, and how she practices calm in the face of high conflict and emotion. Incredibly, this was Rebecca's first podcast interview ever and her first interview since the Fulham game. So I'm honoured and humbled she chose the Mojo Podcast to share all this wisdom with. You're in for a treat with this episode, and it's been timed very deliberately to coincide with the week of International Women's Day 2024 and this year's theme of inspiring inclusion. In return for this episode, as ever, I only have three asks of you. Please do leave a 5-star rating and write a short review on Apple Podcasts. And please do share it with more people who might enjoy hearing this story. Okay, let's go over to the northeast of England for my Mojo conversation with Rebecca Welsh.
So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and a really special guest today on International Women's Day. I'm talking to Rebecca Welsh. Rebecca, or Bex, can I say?
Yeah, Bex. It's not Sunday, so we'll use the abbreviated name.
It's not a game day, okay. So Bex, how are you doing today? It's great to see you.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much for having us on. I'll make a confession, it is my first ever podcast I've done, so we'll see how this one goes, whether it makes the cut or it doesn't.
Well, I can guarantee it will, and thank you. We're honoured that you've chosen the Mojo Podcast to come on and speak to first. We're just saying before, I think there might be many other requests after this one, so we really appreciate that. I always start here, Bex. So Mojo today, out of 10, where are you scoring yourself?
So it's a good job. It's just after 2:30, so it's a good job you've asked us now and not this morning, because I think I was sitting probably on about a 4 this morning. But now I feel like I'm about an 8, so I think I'm getting better as the day has gone on. We had a pretty... Okay. So we travelled over the weekend. We were on Nations League on Friday night in Spain, which is always great, but the kickoffs are 9 o'clock. So for us English people who are in bed for 10, it takes its toll on you. So yeah, bit of a travel weekend, but feeling much better now, ready to go.
Right. So you're home and you're settled, hence the Mojo's kind of coming back on. And great. I really want to get into some of that, you know, your life as a referee and what it's like with all, you know, all the travel and where you're showing up and like changes of time as well from a usual late kickoff to a really late kickoff. And in that, Bex, then if you're tracking at an 8 then now, what does Mojo mean to you as a word?
I think it just means like you get up and go. I think when everyone, when I've, I have, don't use the term a lot, but yeah, I think when someone says, oh, the mojo is good, it's always kind of a positive. It's when people say it's not so good that, you know, you're probably a little bit tired. But for me, it's kind of you get up and go, your attitude. I think sometimes now we live in a world where there's quite a lot of negative things, but I always try to be a little bit more positive around things that we're doing, because if you're more positive, you feel better in yourself. So I think it kind of encapsulates it all in that you're feeling how tired you are, but also your state of mind and how positive you are. So yeah, just having a positive mindset around your life and always looking for the good in things.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, I get this, yeah, as you said, a sense that you're tracking various types of energy that are important to you, your physical energy, mental as well. And also I'm getting a sense of a choice from you as well, as this, you know, I want to sit in this positive frame of mind, this positive attitude that you're going to take to things.
Yeah, and I think as well, it probably comes, I think, a little bit from COVID. I think everybody went through a time where they went through some tough times as to being in lockdowns. But I think obviously the role that I do and a lot of refs do, you know, sometimes it can be quite a negative role on what we do, because we do go out and make unpopular decisions for what one team might perceive to be an unpopular decision. So, which sometimes can be quite negative. So I always like to be as positive as I can be in my own day-to-day life.
Yeah. And I really want to check in with you on that. You know, as I said, life as a referee, when you're dealing with the pressure, what might be the criticism, everybody knows, right? Everyone knows better than anyone what's going on a football pitch as fans. So I really want to check in with that a little bit. And just before we sort of touch into that, so what else would people need to know or should know about you as we start this conversation off? What would be useful for them to know?
I'd probably say I think probably people look at me career and they see me as Rebecca Welsh, the referee. Rebecca Welsh, the person, is probably quite boring. I like to be at home. So, you know, I do spend a lot of my downtime at home. I do have a little dog, so I spend a lot of my time with him. He's really, really chilled. So I think we kind of both rub off on each other that way. But, you know, I'm quite family orientated. So a lot of the girls laugh because I literally live in the same street as my mum and dad, just around the corner.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of my spare time I spend at theirs. Sometimes I'll knock on the door, my dad will say, "What do you want now?" So I think it's more my choice than theirs. But yeah, you know, because we spend so much time away, when I get home, I like to be present and I like to be at home. And that's where I kind of recharge and get ready to go again, really. So it's my happy place.
Oh, fantastic. And I get that real set. Well, as you said, family is really important to you. Home and family. I'm getting a sense of your values coming through here, and you're living them and you're true to them. With all the travel that the job takes you on, you know where you want to be, and as you say, where your happy place is. So we said just again before we started recording today, we're going to sort of do this maybe a little bit in reverse, because clearly there's a really big day in your life quite recently, 23rd of December, I think it was, 2023.
Yeah.
And you took charge of a Premier League game, a men's Premier League game, Fulham versus Burnley, first ever female referee to do that. And, you know, congratulations, by the way, and what a trailblazer, what an inspiration you are. And I really wanted to almost take you back to that day, if that's okay, to walk through it. Was it a completely normal day like any other day when you're refereeing, or is it somewhat different?
It's strange in refereeing because we work like on a week basis. So the way it works for us is we get our appointments on a Monday. So on a Monday, we then know what game we're going to be officiating for that weekend. It was a little bit different around that time because it was Christmas. So they always release the fixtures a little bit earlier because obviously people want to make plans for, obviously football doesn't stop, does it? You know, it runs, well, last year it ran from the 23rd right the way through, and then we'll back out on Boxing Day. So we always get a few more days to kind of plan for families and stuff, which is good. So I knew about this fixture the Saturday before. I got a call basically saying that we're going to appoint you to a Premier League game. It is going to be at Fulham, and it will be released on this date, but we want to give you the heads up a couple of days before it is, because we expect, you know, quite a lot of attention around it. So I think that was it. I remember I was sitting in the house where I normally am when I'm not at football, and I was kind of in shock, and I don't really think I took in a lot of what was said on the call. Obviously, I was delighted because, you know, I think when I first got in a referee, my aim was never to do a Premier League game. And but as you move through the levels, that obviously becomes an ambition of what you want to do. So, yeah, I had a couple of days for it to sink in. And then obviously the appointment come out. And probably very similar to when I refereed in the Football League, the attention, the media attention, although it went, you know, quite big, I wasn't really privy to it because you know, the communications team kind of took the lead on that. And they were sorting out all the requests that were coming in. But the emphasis for me was always, I just want to focus on the game. I knew the occasion was going to be pre-match was going to be, you know, amplified by TV cameras and stuff. And for me, I think like, although I want to concentrate on the game, I understand the reasoning behind why they want to do that and they want to celebrate the event. So, you know I have to buy into that as well. The day itself, so obviously being living in the northeast of England, but miles away from anywhere, so any game's probably a big travel for us. So travel down on the Friday, stayed overnight in the hotel with the boys on the Friday night, and then obviously to the game on the Saturday. It was a little bit surreal when we went in. Fulham's quite a it's quite a small stadium in respect to Premier League, as in when you go in, but it's also quite nice because it's kind of got that feel of an old football ground, which I like. I've been there before, so you know some of the staff are all very welcoming. And I think when we walked out on the pitch to do the GL goal line technology check, there was just a sea of cameras all on me, and it's just not what I'm used to. And it, as a ref, we want to be in the background. We don't want to be seen. You know, we want to just stay out the way, go in, do our job, and come out. So this was a little bit strange. But as soon as we got there, the nerves kind of went. And when you're in the changing room, especially being had a really good team on the day, and they all just made me feel so relaxed. And once you get in the dressing room, you just kind of go into game mode. And for me, I try and just forget all the outside noise that's going on because it's not new for me. Do you know what I mean? I've been through this before where people are interested in me for good reason. Do you know, like I am grateful that people are interested and they want to share my story. So hopefully it inspires other young girls or young boys to take up the whistle.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, so much in there, as you say, you know, it's a place you've been to before. You're doing the job you've done many times before, obviously with massive extra attention, which it sounds like, you know, you accepted now this is part of it. But as you say, I just want to get on with the game, do my job to the highest level. But, and also, you know, with this knowledge, as you said, I am here to inspire.
Yeah, I think you've always got to have that at the back of your mind, not just for me, I think for any of the boys going out, boys and girls going out, you know, people, there will be people in the, we go to games and there's young girls in the crowd will say, oh, I'm a ref, you know, and I've done six games. And so, you know, although there might be thousands of people there, there'll be a couple of people there who may have just come to see you and a look at you for inspiration. What kind of did throw us a little bit was for all the football grounds I've been to, you know, across the world, really, when I walked out at Fulham to do the warm-up, everyone stood up and started clapping. The crowd were, like, clapping. And it was so surreal because I'm like, I just don't know what to do because it's very rare as a ref that if they think you've done a good job, they don't say anything. If they think you haven't done a good job, you kind of know about it. But never have I had a crowd, like, stand up and visibly, like, clap. And it was honestly, it was quite emotional and really surreal to do that. So yeah, I didn't know whether to clap back or, you know, or just smile or, you know, raise my hand. So I probably should have been a little bit more prepared for that, but it was lovely. And, you know, walking out with Fulham, it felt really welcoming, all the crowds and stuff like that. So, and even the teams, like pre-kickoff, you know, very nice. A couple of them come over and said, you know, congratulations, you know, good appointment. Totally different when the whistle goes because everyone goes into game mode and they want to win a football match. So I kind of become irrelevant after the whistle goes, which was which is always the part I wanted to get to. I thought once I blow that whistle, nobody cares about me. So once I blow that whistle, they'll only care about me if they think I've you know, made an incorrect decision. But so once we got to that, I started to probably just relax a little bit more. And you could be, I always say, once you blow that whistle, you could be anywhere. You could be at Fulham on a Saturday afternoon. You could be at the local park because you're literally just going to focusing on, we have a job to do here as a team of four and obviously two guys off the field. So that was the easy bit there, the 90 minutes.
I was going to say, is that where, you know, obviously the training, the years of experience, the knowledge just all kicks in? As you said, game mode, you're switching into it. It sounds like the players are switching into it, the managers after the, you know, the nice words before, right, now we're playing. And the fact that this is the first female to referee a Premier League match is, as you say, that's an irrelevance now. We just want a great performance.
Definitely. And I think for them, although they recognize it as a good thing, obviously they also want somebody to be in the middle of that pitch and officiate in that game who is good enough. And I think that's always important for me. You know, I know there's a big emphasis on Rebecca Welsh as the first female, but I wanted to be there because the people who make these decisions thought I was good enough to be there. And that's so important for me. You know, it's great that I can do it as a female, but I want to be good enough, because if you're not good enough at that level, like it can be a long 90 minutes. So I think that was really, really, really important for me. And you know, I've spent the past 13 years now getting that experience on the field. And you know, gaining experience in the championship can just be as valuable as gaining experience on park football. I come through the Northeast Sunday morning leagues.
Yes.
You know, I honestly say that built me to be the referee I am today, because 10:30 on a Sunday morning, getting up and going out and reffing them, some of the behaviors, some of the tackles, some of the characters you had to deal with, definitely kind of shapes you, for you know the probably what you would probably say the more glamorous appointments.
Right, so go on, give people a flavor of that, because I understand, you know, Sunday League, I've never played it in the Northeast. Just how is that environment?
Yeah, so the environment of the Northeast is very big football orientated. You know, it's a kind of a it feels like a religion up here. You know, you mark your colours, you know, at a very young age, and you stick by them colours throughout. And that's normally either red and white or black and white. But it's the same on park football, that they go out and they think they're playing like, for them it's the World Cup final, and you have to show up and you have to be there and be committed. But you know, I've seen players turn up and they haven't got socks, you know, and they're in different colour socks, and the kits are all holed, or they turn up and they've been on night shift and they've come, or they've turned up and they've come from a night out. And it was challenging at times, because I think back then, you know, we're talking 10 years ago now, there probably wasn't as many female referees within this region as what there is now. So when I turned up, they were always like, oh, is this the ref? And sometimes I think it worked in my favor, because they didn't expect me to be any good. And listen, in my early days, I probably wasn't. You know, I was trying to find my feet. So if I kind of was all right, I thought I was the best ref in the world. So yeah, it was interesting. But I met some interesting characters, and my dad used to come all over with us, and we still talk about it now, some of the characters you met and some of the one-liners you said, and I used to, I think I get marriage proposals every weekend. But listen, it was great, and I love being involved. And sometimes now I think I'd love to go out and just do a Sunday morning, just for the whole kind of atmosphere it was. But yeah, I really enjoy that. Some people hate it, but for me, it was definitely the ground of my refereeing career.
Yeah, but it sounds like, as you're saying it, really, that cutting your teeth there in that particular, you know, challenging yet supportive environment really helped you along your way. And when you're talking about that being good enough bit and you feeling, I know I need to have that to step up to where I want to get to. And it sounds like that arc of yours and that career arc has been really crucial to you knowing that.
And I think, because especially in refereeing, you're always going to have people who tell you you're not good enough, because I guess that's just the nature of football. You know, I'm a football fan. I've been stood on the terraces where a decision's gone against a team I'm supporting, and I've gone, you know, I'm not happy, even though it's probably the correct decision. And it's great your mum and dad telling you you're good enough, but that's, again, is probably a little bit biased to go, well, you're going to say that I'm your daughter. I think I've had a lot of coaches through PGMOL through the years who've kind of also helped shape me, but also told us at times like that wasn't good enough. And I think for us referees, the biggest part of our learning is on the days where, you know, we might not be good enough, or we might make an incorrect decision, because nobody learns anything from being perfect at everything. And in actual fact, nobody's perfect at everything because it's just impossible. And I always say, if I get everything right and I'm perfect, then I'm certainly in the wrong job because I should be saving lives or, you know, performing open heart surgery. But I think, yeah, I think it was really important for me to know that was good enough. But I think it's kind of the hard work that's been put in over the previous 10 years that's kind of got us to this point. And I think probably all the unseen work from referees right across the spectrum that people don't see, because it can be a very isolated environment when you're not on a match day, because 9 times out of 10, you're on your own doing your own training, motivating yourself. It's a very different to a team environment.
And I really wanted to get into that, actually, this whole, you know, obviously, like I said, life as a referee and the mindset and the psychology there, because you've been talking about there is team, there's a highly supportive team on the day, especially,
yeah.
And obviously in the organization you work with. But what I didn't necessarily realize is, you said 9 times out of 10, I'm by myself. I've just got to get on with it. And that's when, you know, I would imagine if some negative thoughts are going to get into your head about, God, last Saturday didn't quite go the way I wanted. And, you know, that one call, I didn't get that the way I wanted it to be. Is that when that might come up and play out?
Yeah, I think it's so, like, from a mental point of view, I think that's always, like, referees, we can go out and make, let's just say on average, we can make 100 decisions a game. 99 of them can be right. And then there'll be one subjective call that could split a room. 10 would say it is, 10 would say it isn't. So it doesn't matter about all the work you've done, you'll probably focus on that one decision. And I guess that's kind of just life as a referee. And there'll always be them decisions where you can't decide whether it's right or wrong because it's just so subjective. And when opinions are involved, that's what happens. So I think from a mental side, you've got to be kind of mentally tough to look at a decision, whether it's right or whether it's wrong or whether it's nobody knows, and go, right, but what can I learn from it? Because that's the most important thing. But also have that time to go, right, I now need to park that and move on, because what we don't want is taking that decision into the next game and having that dwell on it. So I think from the mental side, like, we really do need to park decisions quickly, both in games. If we make a decision in the 3rd minute and we don't want to be thinking about it in the 30th minute because we haven't parked it, but also off the field. And I think that the training part of it is, it's very individual. You know, we have a sports science team who will set our weekly plan, so we know what we have to do, but you haven't got somebody pulling you out of bed in the morning saying, right, you've got to go and train. That has got to be a choice. It's a commitment from us to go out and tick off what we need to do to be in the best possible shape for that game on a Saturday or a Sunday of that week.
Yeah, and I get this, and this sort of sense of the confidence needed and the self-belief needed, because these things must get tested and tested, as you said. I mean, you were talking about, you know, I can't be perfect. A timely reminder that referees are human, and then there may occasionally be an error, but I suppose it's the public nature of where you go to work. It's seen by everybody in many different camera angles, and then all these people talk about it in the studios, on the terraces. But I think that reminder that, look, we're human, and what we're here to do is make the game run as smoothly as possible, and then learn from it. Which I think a lot of people could do with remembering, probably.
Yeah. It's mad though, because I think like us as referees, you know, we've got quite a close group. We discuss the decisions probably just as much as like the fans, the pundits do. You know, we have that discussion around, and it might split a room of referees. I think that's just the nature of the game, and we'd all love to have more than that to look at a decision, but unfortunately on the day that's what we've got, and we have to make a judgment based on all our experience, all our training, all our intuition, and go with it. And like you say, sometimes that'll be the wrong decision, but we have to be brave, stand up and just continue. And also, you'll have a lot of people, you make a decision and for the next 20 minutes people will be telling you it's wrong, but when you see it after the game, it might be the best decision you could have made. So if you continue worrying about it, you might actually be right and you've wasted 20 minutes of your time worrying. So we're very big with our psychology team on parking them decisions and reflecting on them later.
Have you got any tips for us normal people in that? Because, you know, whatever your walk of life, that sort of ability to go, okay, that's happened, I need to park that. To some people it comes quite easily. To most of us, it doesn't. Is there anything that you do that go, okay, as you said, that happened in the third minute. I don't really want to carry that to the 83rd minute. How do you do that?
Yeah. So I think because we're such a small team, you know, there's on the pitch, there's four of us. I always say to my team before we go out, if you make a decision and you are dwelling on that, because sometimes I've had assistant referees who might not have said they've been dwelling on a decision. And for me, I think if I can help you move on from that, if you can get it out there and say, oh, I'm unsure about that, we can then help you as a team. So I think we have got that within the lot of small team. We also kind of know people's behaviours. So some of the girls I work with, some of the boys, they know if I go deathly quiet, that probably something's on my mind. So they pick up on them little things and just kind of give you a kick for a better word to come out of it. But the game moves so fast that you just have to go with it. Trust in what you've seen. I think for us as referees, even when we see it back from the position we've got, we still see exactly the same thing. It might be from a position you haven't got where it might show something slightly different. And like you say, you can't have four different views of one situation so we just have to do our best to get in the right position to see it right and hopefully, fingers crossed, call it right.
Yeah. And with, you know, you're sort of talking about, and now you're sort of mic'd up and obviously this is, you can have these conversations in real time, I guess, which you wouldn't have done on the park football sort of 13 years ago. Similarly with things like goal line technology and VAR, how has that, obviously it's there to help you.
Yeah.
How does that adjustment to having that technology been for you?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, football's moving. And I think for years we talked around about we want this and we want this. And it's like anything in football. I think people, I remember going to a talk in with a really old player, Kevin Ball, who played for Sunderland. And somebody asked him a question, or like, do you want technology in the game? And he said, actually, no, I quite like it when you guys get things wrong because it creates that big discussion around, like, is it right or is it wrong? I think the way football's moved, technology had to be introduced. And I think now anything you introduce with football, because it's so big and it's played with passion and fans have passion, there's always going to be a criticism. I think that's just a given. For me as a referee, I really like it because we talk about parking decisions. If you make a decision and you describe what you've seen and then they come back with, you know, check complete and this is what it is. For me, that is easier to park it than giving a decision,
right,
not having that VAR to double check it and then spending the rest of the game without a check. So for me, I really like it. I think the goal line technology is fantastic because it's not humanly possible to see if a ball has crossed the line by, we've seen some of the pictures, haven't we, where, because of where the ball's shaped. So
yes,
I think it's a really good thing. Like anything, people are going to criticize it. It's going to create a conversation. But football is about creating conversations. Imagine if a game finished and nobody talked about it. It wouldn't be football, would it? So yeah, you know, I'm a fan of the technology, and it's interesting because people always say, I'd love to hear the refs like speak. I'd love to hear the comms. I don't actually think people would because it's not like we have conversations about anything. We literally say stuff that's relevant to the game, and sometimes that dialogue is really, really small. Most of the game is spent probably in silence unless we have to say something or give information. So a lot of my friends would say, I'd love to know what you said. And I say, but you really wouldn't want to listen to that. But I think the technology just aids us, you know, being able to speak to our team on the field for me is amazing. It's brilliant.
And on that sort of the communication bit, because I guess this is the skills of a referee. And I mean, obviously the communication with your team, which we've kind of touched on, but I'd love to just touch on how you're communicating with the players as a game goes. Because again, as you said, the other sports, I think about rugby, for example, you can, the referees are mic'd up and you can hear what they're saying. It's broadcast. We don't get that with football for fairly good reasons, as you said. But how is that? How is the communication as you're going through a game?
I think it depends on the teams and it depends on the players. And I guess it depends on me as a ref. I always say to players, if you've got a question, come and ask me. But be prepared that I might not give you the answer you want. So if you disagreed with something I've given, I'm going to tell you, honestly, I'm going to tell you why I've given what I've given. I might not give you an answer because at that time, there might be, we make a decision every 20 seconds. So at that time, my decision might be more important than answering your question. But what I do always say to them is, I will be open, I will be honest with you, you know, and I'm one of the first to raise my hands. And if I've got something wrong, you know, I'll tell you. There's a lot of players who don't want to communicate, though. You know,
right.
I think you'll find the majority of players now are so focused on what they're doing that they don't actually want that communication. So I think for me, when I used to go from Sunday morning, when I used to talk a lot to players, as you move further and further up, that kind of becomes less. And that's just because players are focused on what they want to do and they're taking instructions from the manager. But when they do want to speak or they want to have dialogue, then I'll have it with them. And 9 times out of 10, I think people think footballers are always come to the referee and always shout. But honestly, 90% of them are not like that. You know, 90% of them will ask honest, genuine questions. Like I say, they might get an answer they don't like, but normally they do it in a respectful way. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, I was on an FA Cup game and a player thought they'd been fouled and I didn't give it. And a player developed, and that the team who thought they'd been fouled, they ended up scoring. And on the way back, he said, "But like, Bex, I think that was a foul." And I said, "Do you know what? I think you're right. I think I got it wrong." And he went, "Well, I don't know what to say now." And I said, "Well, I probably did, you know." And sometimes just having that human side here and just saying, "I'm not going to get everything right." But no, like, generally, you can, if players want to talk, I'll talk to them. And if players don't, then I won't. It depends. Depends what kind of mood they're in and what pressures they're under, because they're under different pressures to what we are.
So that's, again, in that choice in there of how much conversation you're having, that's kind of up to you then as a referee, of you as a personality versus a colleague of yours who, I don't know, they might not be as open to conversation. It's kind of your choice, is it?
Yeah, I think personality plays a massive role in refereeing. And I think everyone's personality across the spectrum of referees is very different. I'm from the Northeast, so I kind of talk a lot. It's kind of my thing. So it's probably more difficult for me not to talk. But yeah, it's just what works for you. You know, if you're not comfortable in doing that, sometimes when you're not comfortable in doing something, trying to do it makes things even worse. So I guess you just find your niche of what you're good at and what helps you manage the players as best you can. And you use that to the best of your ability. Like I genuinely feel, I think people think because I'm a female in a male-dominated sport that I get treated worse because I'm a female, and I actually find it's the opposite. I sometimes think that players might get frustrated and they might want to come and have a go at you. And it's all to do with around passion, and a couple of seconds later, they've calmed down. Sometimes I think when they get to me, they're not as bad. And I don't know whether they think because of a perception thing or because I'm probably only 5'4" and they might think I'm 5'4" and angry. But yeah, I genuinely think that the male players are better with me than what they are with the male referees. Again, it might not be, it might just be my feeling, but I always think I get less criticism because I'm a female. Whereas I think people want the narrative to be you get treated worse because you're a woman, but I've never found that.
Right. That's interesting, because I did want to talk about that sort of, because we do, you know, we see the conflict sometimes between player and referee. We see sometimes, you know, incredible aggression being shown. And in some leagues, you see it go way overstepping the mark as well. But from what you're saying, it's your personality, I'd say possibly my gender as well, my height, my physical stature. Something is calming these men in this instance down very, very quickly. Because I wanted to get into that. If there is conflict and tension, what you do to bring it down?
It's weird because probably when I was younger, like I was probably, probably when I first started off, I was probably quite an angry referee. So like if someone shouted at me, I shouted at them, and then we'd kind of go up to the point where we'd both be shouting and getting like nowhere. And I think over the years, I've kind of become, I wouldn't say more relaxed, but I've kind of become more open to just not responding. Like, so if they're angry, don't respond straight away, because if your response is angry, then it just puts them up. You know what I mean? So I just try and be calm, but not dismissive, because I think if people are angry, angry is probably the wrong word. They're probably just frustrated because they genuinely feel like I've gotten something wrong. If they feel then that they're not being listened to, that just inflames them even more. And I think in my head, I always think I have to manage these sets of players for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
If somebody's frustrated in minute three, I don't want him frustrated for the other 87 minutes of the game. So I need to do whatever I can. And I found what works best is for me to stay calm. Even if, like, inside I'm bubbling, it's kind of having your body language to tell a story that probably inside isn't doing. Doesn't always work because different players, sometimes you cannot reason with players and you're best off just giving them an answer and moving away. And then 10 minutes later, they'll probably come and speak to you very calm and, you know, on a back down to an accessible level where you can speak to them. But it's just judging that within the time. And that's not, for me, I don't think that's something you can teach. You have to learn that over time. You have to make the wrong judgment with someone and get the wrong reaction and then go, that probably wasn't the best thing to do. And I think it's, people might say it's also players' responsibility. I think it's more of a referee's responsibility because we're in charge of managing that game.
And that's when you put it that way. You know, I'm managing this game for 90 minutes. As I said at the beginning, I want just the best outcome for everybody, and where I'm almost invisible as much as possible. And I love that sense. I'm actively managing this. And I really got this sense that obviously you're, you know, trained referee, but also having a good sense of psychology as well for knowing if, you know, is this a moment for me to have a conversation with this player? Or should I actually be stepping away? And as you say, this is what I think. Let's move away and come back together maybe later to have more of a calmer conversation.
I think as well, it's about, we have to do our homework. It's not just us turning up on the day and going, okay, right, we're reffing these today. I think you take the Women's Super League, for example. I've reffed in that league. I think, God, I can't even remember when I started. I think I started when the WSL started. So, and because there's not a load of teams in there, I've built up a relationship with players over time. So then you kind of go into the game knowing what you can say and who wants to have conversations and who doesn't before the game even starts. So that's also us as referees to take the responsibility to do our homework on the teams, on how they play, different aspects around it, which can help us when we actually get to the match day. So kind of knowing your players, and that comes over time by reffing them. You know, some teams I've seen two or three times, so you kind of build up an idea of what someone's like, but they also build up an idea of what you're like, you know, because the teams will do the homework on the referees who are coming, so they know who's coming at the weekend and they look at that as well. So I think anything we can do as referees to get that, you know, edge, maybe it's the extra 5% of knowing your players a little bit more, can always help us on a match day.
Yeah. So this extra level of preparation, which I don't know, might be a bit of a surprise for people listening, that, you know, you are, I'm looking, obviously I know the team's playing, but I'm getting into who are the personalities who are turning up today. How have they been before? You know, what might come up? And I guess you have that conversation as your core officiating team, do you, before you go in?
Yeah, but I also think it's important not to like prejudge people as well, because, you know, I've probably done some games where I've made bad decisions or people have perceived to make bad decisions. And then the next time you go back there, it's in the head thinking, oh, you know, she didn't have a very good game last time. So it's important not to prejudge, because although you might have an experience of one player from one game, the next game might be totally different because the result might be different, or they might be under different pressures that game. So there's a whole load of psychology goes into that. And it's just about which parts you use and which parts can enhance your game.
Yeah.
And then when you've done all that, you can then get down to refereeing a football match.
So actually, as I say, cross the line and kind of get on with it. Now, I know right at the beginning, you said this is, you know, mojo for you. It's about having this positive attitude. Now, has there been a time in this career arc that you've talked us through where you've gone, you know what, I don't know if this is for me, or I say the challenges are too great, the pressure's too much, maybe I'll go back to the day job, because I know you worked within the NHS for many years. Was that ever a thing?
Oh God, yeah. Like the amount of times I come home in the early days and threw me back down and said, I'm never going out again. And I think if any ref says they haven't done that, they're probably lying. It's like any job, isn't it? You know, you have you have some really bad days. But I'd always like to think that in any job, if your bad days are starting out with your good days, then you should probably, think of a career change. I think from my honest opinion, although I've had some days where have been really bad, but more down to my own personal reflection on things where they probably haven't actually been as bad, but I've made them worse. The good definitely outweighs the bad. I think, 13 years ago, I was sat here, working for the NHS, loved my job, would never have thought of leaving. 13 years' time, I've traveled all the way around the world. I've met some amazing people. I've refereed in the biggest league in the world. I sit back and I think, how did this happen? Because this wasn't the plan. I didn't plan to come out and do this. I'm sitting here this morning and it's surreal sometimes. Funny enough, I was on with a psychologist just before you. We were doing a session and I said the same to him. I said, like, I'm just a normal person. I'm quite boring. When I'm not a football, I walk my dog, I go and see my family, I don't do anything outrageous. But then you go out and people like treat you as though like they treat you like a superstar. And for me, that's a bit surreal. But yeah, like, see, there's good and bad days, but the good definitely outweigh the bad 100%.
And it sounds, this is a theme for this series. It comes back to your commitment to it. Through all those times, you said, and thank you for that massive honesty. Of course, there are bad days because it's. I guess there's lots of externalities in football as well. It's. I guess, and these are my words, but you're judging your performance. But as we said before, lots of other people are judging your performance as well, and that could start to get into one's head. And there you are. You find ways of working through it.
I hope you're enjoying this brilliant conversation and that there are no ads to interrupt your listening. Well, until this one, just a quick one. I welcome you to visit mojo-leadership.com to see if you and your business could benefit with some more mojo in your life. That's what we do via one-to-one leadership coaching and team workshops. More info in the show notes. Okay, back to our mojo conversation with Rebecca Welsh.
Incredible success in your career to date. What's next? What are the, I don't know, these are the things, the games I want to be involved with, the level I want to get to. I don't know. Do you ever even think about players I'd like to officiate, Messi, that sort of thing?
To be fair, it's mad because when you go out and I've got two nephews and one of them is massive. He's 8 now, so he's massive into football. He knows all the football players. But it's quite nice though because he knows all the women, like the Women's Super League as well, which is great. The success of the Lionesses has been brilliant. But when I go to work and I'm on the field with these players, like I just don't, it doesn't even come into my head, which is really strange because Rebecca Welsh probably 15 years ago would have. But now when you go there, they're just kind of part of the game. So yeah, it is quite surreal. And then I'll come home and my nephew will say, oh, did you see so-and-so today? Did you see so-and-so? For us, it's just a job, but yeah, I don't really get starstruck or anything like that.
But I imagine that helps a bit. Because if that was going on, that could, have a level of bearing.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, more so because I've come through the Women's Super League when I first kind of started, then you've kind of grown with it. So the players now, especially in the women's game, they're massive and rightly so, they've earned that right. But I've been with them all the way along. Some of them are reffed in the youth teams. So like when I used to do Sunday afternoon, they were in the youth team. So now I see them come through and I think, and you know what it is? Most of them haven't changed. Like they're the same now as what they were then, which is really good to see. I think sometimes I go to, it's more me for football grounds. Like I don't like, not that I don't like going to big stadiums, but I grew up going to Roker Park with Sunderland, which is
old Sunderland.
So it's like old.
Yeah.
And I remember my first game, they played Tottenham and Paul Gascoigne played for Tottenham I'm showing my age now massively. When people, you just ask what's next, people are going to be saying it's about time she retired. I think the kind of going to the old grounds is quite sentimental to me. Get the chance to go to places like Hillsborough, which has got so much history and quite an emotional place to go. So, but what's next? I'm not sure. I think, sometimes I always said to myself, I won't go past 40. And then I was 40 in December, and I was like, oh, I'm 40 now. So listen, I would like to go on as long as I can. Obviously I've done two Premier League games now. You know, I'd love to do some more, but like I say, you've got to be good enough and you've got to be selected to do them. So we'll see what the end of the season brings. We've got 3 months left, what we call the business end of the season. And then we've got a pre-season break, which will be nice. Because we've missed, obviously, the last two, we've been at the Euros and then the World Cup. So it'll be nice to have a few weeks off. But I don't know yet. I'm still undecided. I would like to go on forever, but I don't think I'm going to be running around in 10 years' time. So I don't know. We'll see. I'd like to stay in football. You know, we've got a lot of young girls coming through now. Like the quality of young girls in refereeing who will come through now is fantastic. We've got a good structure in place, which is helping them develop into the roles probably quicker than what we did because of the investment that's been put into the women's game. So, you know, personally, I would like to stay and I would like to use my experience to help develop these girls. So, yeah, hopefully. But that depends if people have us. But from now, keep me feet on the ground and stay on the pitch for hopefully at least another season and see where we go from there.
Yeah, well, I get, you know, and thank you for sort of trotting through what, you know, there's things you know about and things you don't know about, right,
yeah,
that are coming forward. But this sense of you and your position as a role model for, you said, and you know, lots of girls coming through, also young boys who want a referee, because yeah, everything you said, it's not the easiest thing to do, clearly, but it's super important that someone has the skills, the experience and the ability to be there and allow the game to be the best game it can be. What do you have any advice for young boys, young girls who probably love football, because you kind of have to, I guess, to do what you do, but who want to pursue a refereeing career?
I've always said I never wanted to be a ref. And now I'm sat here and I've refereed two games in the Premier League. So I think if you've got a passion for football and you love football, and I get everyone wants to be a player, I understand that. Unfortunately, the stats show that very few make it. Give refereeing a go. It's fully accessible. You can do it, and if you don't like it, then you don't have to carry on, but give it a go, because I ended up probably getting the best job I could have ever done by just giving it a go. I also think that if, especially for me with refereeing, it is a big commitment. You have got to make a lot of sacrifices, but one thing I do is I enjoy it every Saturday when I walk out there. You know, I've walked out of places like Wembley, you know, that walked out at the Olympic Stadium in Australia for the Women's World Cup. Like, never, ever would I be able to do that as a player. So, yeah, if you want to be involved in football, look into alternative roles rather than just players, because there's loads out there, refereeing being one. Refereeing gives you the best seat in the house. You can be involved with the players. And honestly, the community around refereeing, like, refereeing is quite niche, and I always say, like, oh, I'm probably a little bit weird for being a ref, but I have met some of the best people ever by being a ref. And if I hadn't been a ref, I wouldn't have met these people. So yeah, listen, if you've got any small interest, just give it a go. If you don't like it, at least you give it a go.
Amazing. And I guess that there is the payoff for the commitment. When you have that sort of, as you say, that sort of experiences you had, the community that you built, the belief in yourself, you said this. I know I am good enough to go out on that pitch and officiate this game. Bex, what an amazing conversation! Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for making the Mojo Podcast your first podcast, and we've just had such a great time talking to you. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having us on. Really enjoyed talking about myself for the last hour.
There we go. Thanks, Bex.
No worries. Cheers.
What a great conversation with a genuine trailblazer in her field, totally committed to what she's doing and inspiring the next generation of referees, as well as inspiring greater inclusion in football as a whole. A huge thank you to Bex for trusting the Mojo Podcast with her story. And I think it's a really important story to share for many reasons, not least about a woman gaining entry to an exclusive men-only club that's been going for over 130 years. And why? Because she's good enough.
I think it's a great news. with Rebecca all the best in this new experience. I think the feedback is going to be really positive.
I think it's a great moment. I think for me, it's got to be based on ability, not gender. Ability to referee, and I fully support it.
Excellent idea. More than welcome. Hopefully in the future can be more.
I've always wanted to get Pep Guardiola onto this podcast, so there we go. I also always try to share a quick summary of each Mojo conversation. I mean, there's so much to take away from this one. Here are perhaps my top three takeouts. Her humility and honesty, and that acknowledgement that there may be mistakes, but that's the only way we're going to learn at this level. And how she leads on the pitch, her own emotions, how she communicates with her team and the players, and how she's learned to diffuse any kind of fiery situation. And yes, her commitment to her career, 13 years on, it's taken her to incredible places and amazing experiences because of her commitment to it and her dedication. I truly believe we can all learn from this and apply it to our own lives. Real Mojo in action there. As I mentioned, do rate, review and share this podcast. Also do check out the 70 other conversations I've had with amazing guests over the last 4 years. As I mentioned, I invite you to find out more about Mojo Leadership on the website, and that link's in the show notes. And I'll be back next week with another inspiring guest and their story of Mojo and commitment to their passion. Until then, I hope your Mojo continues to flow.